Hi, welcome to Responsible Management. This is a new initiative from the University of Bradford School of Management, where we'll be talking about all things to do with responsible management, which is a theme very much at the heart of the School of Management and part of our kind of vision and mission. And I'm sure we'll talk a bit more about that in this first session as well. My name's David Spicer. I'm Professor of Small Business Development and Organisational Studies and Director of Business and Community Engagement here at the School of Management. And I'm going to be hosting this series. And each time I'm going to be joined by a couple of speakers from our academic community here at the university and from our industry and kind of business community more widely. And I'm delighted to be joined this morning by James Mason and Professor Sankar Sivaraja. So James Mason is a very well-known business leader here in Yorkshire. He was appointed Chief Executive Officer of the West and North Yorkshire Chamber of Commerce last year. I think it's about a year in terms of being in role, James. And prior to that, he was Chief Executive of Welcome to Yorkshire. James is a journalist by training. He's just been giving us a few tips. A former BBC News and sports reporter. And he's also been an entrepreneur. He set up his own manufacturing business over 20 years ago. He's worked as a sports agent and held leadership roles at Bradford City and Rochdale Football Clubs. James has also founded two not-for-profit dementia cafes in West Yorkshire as well. Professor Sankar Sivaraja is Dean of the School of Management and joined the University of Bradford in December 2017. He's a Professor of Technology Management and Circular Economy, and his research is interdisciplinary, focusing on the use of emerging digital technology by business for the betterment of society. He's the Deputy Editor of the Journal of Enterprise Information Management and has published over 70 scientific articles in leading peer-reviewed journals and conferences. His research is about tackling societal challenges such as energy efficiency, digital currencies, consumer behaviour and the reduction of waste, and it's featured in media publications such as the World Economic Forum and on the BBC. So welcome James, welcome Sankar, really looking forward to our kind of conversation. So perhaps if we could start off, you tell us what does responsible management mean for you, James?
Yeah, well, thank you for inviting me here today. It's great to be part of this podcast. And I suppose the question, what is responsible management, is a big one, but a good one to kick off with. And I think from my own perspective, and these can only be my own thoughts on the subject, is that the word management has to have responsible and responsibility inextricably linked with it, because anyone that has a role within management of people, of finances, of resources, of operations, etc., therefore has a responsibility in terms of how they're used, distributed, welfare of individuals, their well-being, etc. So in terms of responsible management, it's being aware of what, I suppose, the outcomes and the objectives that you're tasked with. And that, of course, ranges. So I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all answer to this, but if it's okay, if I use my experience as a chief executive or leading an organisation, you're responsible for people, you're responsible for cash flow and business performance, you're responsible for external brand and perception, and therefore communications internally and externally. And ultimately, I was on a similar podcast yesterday where there was a managing director of a large accounting firm that said, I'm responsible for 70 mortgages. Ultimately, you know, the people that we employ, every decision that we make has to be thought about in the context of who we employ, how we employ them. So the level of risk that you take has to be responsibly managed. So I think it varies, of course, from person to person, but anyone that has a level of responsibility, whether that's cleaning an office or driving a taxi, whatever that might be, the management of that has to be looking at the risk involved, the level of risk, the opportunity, and therefore the challenges. So that's my little kickoff, and I'm sure both of you will have different perspectives on that, but I suppose that's what I'm dealing with on a day-to-day basis.
Brilliant. Thanks, James. And I think the personal experience, what you relate to, is absolutely key in terms of having a clear sort of purpose of what every single person might, responsible management might be, and it might not fit everyone. I'll start off with a book definition, and then I'll also give you my personal values and beliefs of what a responsible management means to me. So the book definition, I was looking at it, and there's range, and as academics, we are really good to debate against this topic. So, but what I found, one which was genuinely sort of that captured it really well, was where it was actually about, responsible management was about seeking really to balance the interests of all the stakeholders. Like you said, it could be people, organizations, environment, government, to proper really to think about the past, current, and the future generation, and not make sure the society actually is for the better. So I think that was quite a good one, I thought, from a book definition in itself. Now, step away from what that all means. And personally, in the current role I do, when you take on a leadership or management role, and what I principally believe is where you actually have to have a principled approach. And that could be really amongst, I'm not going to list a laundry list of characters of what a good leadership is, but three things that I believe is important. Think about the purpose of the role that you do. Always, always believe in what you think this is meant to be in whatever role you take on as a manager, like you said, in an organization, be it in a public sector or a business school environment. Purpose is absolutely key to defining what you want to do. Values, that could range from different things for every single person. For me, it could be around being honest. It could be about being positive in the attitude that you take in problem solving. It could be about humility. But I think those values really need to reflect yourself as a person. I think that's important. So the values range, quite important. And third is the social context and the awareness and the impact that you might have when you take an action. That comes through compassion, for example. It could come through empathy. But I think if you can focus on all of that and understand what your actions in this really important roles that you have as a manager or a leader, that makes a good responsible management action.
Yeah, I think that's a really fair point. Just to build on that, actually, depending on the role that you take on, in many ways you are the baton holder for the future. So you mentioned past, present and future. So you're taking on a role. I'll give an example. When you are running a football club, the stakeholders are the fans, the players, the sponsors, the owners, etc. And you may be taking on a position from a turbulent past, looking forward to a positive future. You may be taking on from a positive past and heading into a turbulent future because of the economy changing. Look at COVID, etc. But I think that key phrase that you just mentioned there, purpose, values, and also what's in front of you, to try and make the role that you are responsible for better than the past, and that's open to interpretation. And leaving it in a great position for whoever's coming next, if that makes sense. So excellent build.
Yeah, I think football's a really interesting case study in that regard, isn't it? I mean, you get, you know, from a stakeholder perspective, you get so much passion and commitment, engagement from a fan base, and that can often come across as a challenge to management, and the dynamics of kind of responding to that in a business setting can be quite difficult, I guess.
There are so many examples, and obviously we probably don't want to focus just on football, but I have some background in it. But yeah, the responsibility of a football manager, owner, chairperson, etc. Fans, of course, want success on the pitch.
Yeah.
And often we were challenged with the responsibility of diverting funds to the safety of supporters. Mm-hmm. That might be new seating, that might be additional toilet space or wheelchair space, whatever it might be. And you might be faced with a decision of 50, 60, 70, 80,000 pound investment that of course could go on a player. So you may have fans going, oh, my seat isn't particularly safe, or the floodlights look a little bit crumbly, or this, that and the other. Okay, well, we're going to spend some money on that. But what about that striker that we want you to buy? So it comes back to purpose and balance, objectives, culture, because if the management structure or the stakeholders that carry the purse strings or direct the purse strings say it's win at all costs, well, that's one KPI, success on the pitch, but is that responsible of the future? You know, we've seen many football clubs be successful on the pitch and then go bust a few years later or drop down the league. So it's a really interesting question that you're posing today.
So there's something therefore in this whole responsibility piece about balancing the needs of the organisation. It's not just about ethics and treating everybody. You've still got to make sure the economic needs of the organisation are met. Back to your point you started with, James, about ultimately you're responsible for the sustainability of that organisation. And if you're not thinking about that and balancing that out, You know, that suggests a whole set of tensions from a management perspective in terms of making those, you know, sometimes difficult decisions about, well, how and where do we invest and how do we make decisions about the right things from an organizational perspective. Any reflections on that about the, you know, the difficulties of decision making in that kind of context?
Yeah, well, I'll hand over to Sankar, but just before I do that, the element of, I suppose, decision making and stakeholder management in football could be transcended to any industry. Let's look at energy production for argument's sake. And if we use history as an example, of course, fossil fuels was the sensible, the most obvious, the quickest way to produce energy in the past. And if now, the KPI, if we were running an energy firm now and we were told to get the fastest, most efficient energy production out there possible, we'd potentially stick with coal-powered fire stations or, of course, nuclear. But now we're in a new age where we have to be responsible about the planet, which once upon a time wasn't a consideration, responsible in terms of the health and safety of our employees. So whichever industry you look at, you're always balancing the purpose, the motivation, what the objective, what the outcome is, and, of course, the structure of an organisation. Purely private sector with shareholders, public sector, altruistic, charity. So, Sankar, I don't know if you want to share that.
No, brilliant, James. And I think the energy sector is a very good example. And if you talk about decision making, it is hard. And especially when it comes to in these positions, you are not going to be able to please everyone. Yeah. Understanding what your real goals are and the purpose really should mean that you're driving not purely for, let's say, financial sake of things. So understanding what that impact could mean in terms of sustainability, it could range from economic, social, and environmental factors, fine. But the classic case about even shifting from fossil fuel to, let's say, electric power, you still have to consider all the factors that might be involved in actually the transition to a sort of renewable energies. It's not about if you have your sort of the core suppliers still working on fossil powered energy and then you're using all the electricity in the world to charge your, you've just shifted the problem somewhere else.
Yeah.
You have to have a really systems wide thinking where you actually think about the impact that it could have.
Yes.
And the decisions should consider every single, and it's hard to do, it's easy said than done, but I always think it's important to think about the big picture, what the impact that could have, maybe from all of the stakeholders. It could be consumers, it could be employees, as you said, it could be your stakeholders who are investing, but ultimately, as a manager, leader, the decision comes back to you and making those hard decisions, considering all these factors is what really key to your goals and objectives drives the responsible decision making in itself. And it's not easy as we sort of put it out there, but if you can have that, not a narrow-minded, close-minded decision making where you don't care about the generation or the future, I think that matters a lot.
Yeah, I think a framework of to enable you to arrive at a responsible decision is useful. Because as you say, nothing will ever be black and white, but there will be variables. But if there's a bandwidth and a tolerance that you're prepared to, for example, let's look at risk. Risk taking varies from an individual perspective, a company perspective, based on the size of the opportunity and the challenge, etc. But there needs to be a hard stop where you don't go past it. You know, that might be the safety of an individual at work. That might be the safety of, as we said, sustainable future of the business, etc. So I often use a flowchart with many of my decisions, and sometimes you get to a hard stop. No, James, as part of the culture of the business and as a management structure and what we've all signed up to as a strategy, that's a no. And that's a level of responsibility because, of course, I could push the boundary and I might go, that for me is the right decision. But if we've agreed a set of principles and what is flexible but what's a hard stop, I think, again, that enables you to be responsible for also your team and then, again, for the next person that might be sat in your shoes. Yes, they have a bandwidth to apply with, but also there are some things that are just non-negotiable.
Yeah, I think there's a really strong point there about recognising your endpoint and your parameters of what your circle of concern is and the implications of kind of stepping out of that. And a lot of the failures that we see in organisations is people lose perspective on those things, don't they? And they've carried down a set of decisions and they carry on down that set of decisions way past that stop point, kind of on that kind of basis.
And I want to pick up on that. I think that was a very good point because if you can, and it's so that you still know what you want to consider as a framework, and each person will differ in this role. And what the values hold sometimes, and this is where the question about ethics, what you might believe, James, is the right or wrong, I might not believe. Mm-hmm. And that's where the problem of being ethical comes into it. And so having a sense of if it's a 3-point check or a 5-point check aligned to any organization, be it big or small, driven by, let's say, the principles that organizations have always held and you want to continue. And I think if it's a good principle set up for heritage that you want to build on, so be it. I think that's important. Think about the goal as a sense of purpose that the organization wants to deliver, absolutely key. And also, what do you really want to deliver for the society, or be it for the customers that you really uphold? So I think having a 3-point check of, like you said, a flow chart for any organization would be a helpful way of actually drawing the boundaries where your actions might consider.
If we look at some glorious failures, and I don't mean to name names, but let's use a very high profile one of Nick Leeson and Barings Bank. You know, very intelligent man, very successful at what he was doing at the time. But you could argue in retrospect, of course, it was irresponsible, some of the decisions that he made, because of what it led to. And I think there would have been checks and balances, there would have been parameters that he could stay within, but clearly he made decisions at that time that he thought were the right decisions based on a set of principles and a structure and an organisation that he was within. And we'll all make decisions that, with hindsight, will be the wrong ones. So therefore, I think if there are structures in place, as you mentioned, but giving someone an entrepreneurial flair, if that's their industry they're in, to push those bounds a little bit, but then hard stops, I think will help. But then equally, I think with responsible management, and that is the question, I think before anyone takes on a level of decision-making prowess, the ground rules need to be just set, don't they? And strong governance to enable that to be challenged on the back of that.
And I think that's part of the big lesson from the Barings example, isn't it? Is the failings of the individual and the dynamics at that level. But then there's the failings of the institution in terms of having its priorities wrong, and the governance failings. And and they sort of all stack up on top of each other. And if any one of those was different, the risk of that failing occurring would be much lower. I'm struck by time in the conversation. So we talked about Barings, which is arguably a very different era. And obviously, you mentioned energy and how our attitudes to energy and energy production has changed over time. And another example occurred to me. So the cooperative as an organization was doing high welfare in its meat long before that was an industry standard. They couldn't sell that as a benefit to consumers back in the 80s and the 90s because consumers didn't see that as a benefit. Do we think, which is where I'm kind of going with this, do we think that the case for kind of responsibility and the kind of issues we're talking about these days is easier because everybody is bought into this agenda, or do we think we've still got to convince some people?
Good question. Yeah. I think if we were to, the challenges are quite different in terms of time, what we have come forward with. I think there's a lot of opportunities, like you said, as the generation have come accustomed to the actual, let's say, the awareness level of the issues we are facing as human society, be it environmental challenges that we are going, the actions that we might be having, the uncertainty of, let's just say, the geopolitics, the war. Every single thing is driving, I would say, the society to think differently, being aware of the actions that might have. I would say there's an opportunity to seize there. And I would say there's a lot more awareness than what it was before. And not to blame anything, I think the demands and the needs at that time in the history was very different. Industrialization was very different. There's a need to think about how businesses can scale, how can we better use technology, be it machinery. So there's a need for driving that as human sort of society and civilizations grew. And there was little thinking about what this actions might have for the future generation. And purely for, it might be one reason is that there wasn't enough, let's say, information and data, and people are a lot more sort of hot on, let's say, data being available to make those actions and KPIs, and people might not be aware of it. I know there was media and everything, but I think the awareness level and the readiness of information availability certainly has helped every generation to be a bit more sort of clued on to what any actions might have.
Yeah, there's a number of layers here, I would suggest. Time, of course, offers perspective, and education is really important, you know, across the world. as Sanka's just mentioned there, you know, the availability of information and sharing good practice is so much easier now than what it once was, you know, in centuries gone by. And of course, we didn't know what we know now. So I think time is really important. There are, of course, layers, as I mentioned. So there are some things that are sacrosanct. There are some things that, irrespective of time, past, present, or future, we will agree are sensible and appropriate and fair. For example, let's use an extreme. Killing wouldn't be ever used as a positive way to grow. Yes. Let's say human beings, by the way, so let's not bring animals into it. But I think we could all agree that's understood across the annals of time. Mm-hmm. However, allowing people to work from home, being aware of family commitments for male or female parents, etc., understanding the use of fossil fuels, understanding how we should try and be more carbon neutral. These would not have been concepts as a responsible manager 100, 150 years ago, would they? Now, it is part of responsible management. It's also, let's be honest, part of marketing strategies for some companies. Look at the growth of vegan food and vegan diets and vegan restaurants over the last 5, 10, 15 years. It's brilliant. But once upon a time, it wouldn't necessarily have been thought about as a way to grow an industry. So therefore, I think we have to look at this with spectrums, if that makes sense. There are some things that, irrespectively, wherever you drop the pin, whether it's the 15th century, modern day, or into the 24th century, sacrosanct. And then there'll be some things that will change based on perspective, time, and that flow of information and education, as we know. Podcasts might be really the wrong thing to do in 15, 20 years, because we might find out that they burn so much energy, or I don't know. Hot air from me and Sanka, probably. Who knows?
I think James has covered really well in terms of how things have evolved over time. And the key thing is keeping up with the sense of, I would say, awareness of what's happening in this day and age, I think. And things will change, and seizing it as not just a challenge, but as an opportunity to tackle that. I think that's important. And there's always the unknowns. And this is the day and age of the unknowns. We live in a world of uncertainty, lack of resources, I would say. Therefore, considering where you are at and thinking about the future is absolutely important to make some key decisions that brings in awareness from a time perspective as well.
Yeah. And also, we must be respectful of, whilst we are talking about a moment of time now, the world is very different, you know, developing countries versus modern Western society. So emerging countries, you know, where fossil fuels and energy production, again, to use that, and other practices, it's means to an end. You know, if you are a fast-growing organisation in China, in India, in Pakistan and other parts of the world whereby some other concepts haven't yet been introduced to you or available, naturally, it's means to an end. So you will get to the end result, which might be production of a product, of a service, etc., in ways that perhaps more advanced economies are able to do it quicker. Does that make sense?
Very good point.
I think the responsible management angle there has to be applied differently. You're dealing with the situation and the circumstances that you've got, and actually the outcomes and the ability to change that might be, again, different. So what tools have you got available to you?
So there's something about the dynamics of the environment, and recognising that if we talk about responsibility in a global context, we have to recognise that not every organisation, every society is in the same place, has the same tools and opportunities.
I was going to follow up on that because that triggered a really good point about the awareness and the global context coming from cultural aspects of it as well.
Of course, yeah.
And there's a lot of things that has happened, and there could be good lessons learned from the past equally and from different nations on actions which might be classed as responsible sort of management. So I think it's important that that's reflected on. Equally, there could be lessons learned. So I would say having that awareness of how different societies work in different contexts, geographical locations, be it is a global south or so the global north, I think the cultural aspects has a key role to play in terms of responsible management and leadership.
I'm just cutting into the podcast to tell you a little bit about the offer that we have for businesses locally as part of the business and community engagement support. We have our Knowledge Transfer Network, that's regular networking events where you can come on campus, meet like-minded people, hear from some of our and leading industry experts. We have our Bradford Business Challenge projects where we have students coming out and working with you and supporting the work that you do. We have our consultancy clinic where we have students delivering on short-term small projects for businesses as well. There's also lots of ways that you can engage with and interact with our students as guest lecturers, as mentors on some of our entrepreneurship programs, and through involvement in the curriculum. And equally, from a research perspective, we can work with you on collaborative research. If you think there's something we can help with, please reach out to us at BACE, that's base, BACE, at bradford.ac.uk. Thank you, and now back to the podcast. The other thing in terms of the current climate that occurs is obviously about the pressures and shocks that we're facing. So we're in a unprecedented economic era in terms of inflation at 10% plus. That's creating significant pressures on individuals and organisations. We're coming out of COVID now, hopefully. You know, certainly here in the UK, the news on that looks quite positive in terms of falling number of cases, but we're still dealing with the consequences of Brexit and understanding the impact of that. And I guess my question in that is, all those sorts of challenges, how do they affect the case for responsibility? Is it the same argument when people are facing the kind of economic pressures they're facing today?
I would say, Dave, it's more important than ever now for people to be taking very important and good decisions, and that has a responsible sort of action that comes with that. The reason being is, just like you said, the world is full of unknowns, uncertainties, there's lack of resources, geopolitical issues, and that are caused sometimes by human actions and the people who are in power and who are in those decision-making roles. So having a sense of purpose and having a sense of belief in doing good to the society is more important than ever for anyone in a role of power, and power doesn't take all responsibility. When someone said, oh, actually, you now become the dean of the School of Management, you must have a really good sense of power. I said, no, the first thing I thought is I have a huge responsibility to deal with. So you need to balance the power trip over making sure there is a good sense of awareness of what responsible that you have, be it your students, be it the employees, but then that comes first rather than having a power trip and saying, I've got a really powerful decision that I can make and let's go and push that button and not think about the world.
Yeah, I'll build on that in terms of the current state of politics in this country. But before I do that, the past few years has seen an unprecedented use of the word unprecedented. I, COVID, Brexit, etc. You know, these are unprecedented times. We've never faced it. So going back to Sanker's point earlier on about past, present and future, evaluating someone's management of responsibility can often be measured on how people have done it in the past. Well, Brexit's a new challenge for Europe and countries wanting to trade with the UK. But of course, COVID was that unprecedented, you know, pandemic. And therefore, no one had dealt with it before. So every decision that was made was a leap of faith in many ways. So coming back to that construct of structure and what's right, irrespective of making the decisions, I think the UK government managed many aspects of the COVID pandemic responsibly and quite well. Of course, you know, with hindsight, we're going to look back at it and our future generations will refer to our children. Yeah, there were times when you couldn't go out. Yeah. It was almost like the blackout or rationing, etc. You know, it's strange that you couldn't see your next door neighbour or you couldn't have friends around or you all had to work from home. But equally, the point about power and management and responsibility, if you think about the current government now, we have major infrastructure challenges. We have major civil and industrial action at this moment in time. And if there wasn't a conflict with political parties, we would all say that, yes, transport infrastructure, energy production for the future, sustainability are all core things that are responsible management for a government to do, irrespective of who's in power. However, it seems to be the case of the way politics is constructed that I have to disagree with your point of view, you have to disagree with my point of view to get the power. But then with the power, the responsibility should be, irrespective of which side of the argument, what the right thing to do in terms of managing the responsibility of this country are these four or five concepts that we need for growth, progression, prosperity and wealth creation and, I suppose, well-being of the nation.
Agreed. And I think if people, and this is the hardest thing, we are the biggest challenge, people, us, society, I think we make our life even more harder. If we can come to an understanding of what a common good looks like, absolutely, and the sense of direction that we are all there for actually serving the people. It'd be politics. We are there to serve the society. And that's your purpose. Then work backwards in terms of everything that you've said in terms of even be it healthcare and the infrastructure, the transport, and look at where the real key priorities might be, and really putting the resources and working together is absolutely crucial if you want to tackle the challenges that we serve.
And on that, the highest level of responsible management is governing a country, isn't it? You know, we're looking at a war in Ukraine, which is implausible to most of us on the planet, but clearly not for a certain mindset. I've just watched overnight All Quiet on the Western Front, and you're seeing a different perspective on war. But this is, you know, this is fundamentally the highest level of responsible management, management of a nation, of a people. But whichever side of the argument you're on, they've gone into that with an idea, an ideology, a structure. Yeah. They've bought into something. However, you know, we almost take a stand back and go, even though that was their understanding, their principle, their mantra, that cannot be responsible management of human life and the human condition and then going forward as a society. So can we find common good? That has to be the purpose. That has to be the principle. They've got to be the ground rules. But even within that, you'll never get some societies, cultures to accept it.
So it's about looking for that integrative and collaborative perspective at every level, isn't it? It's,
every level.
I think you're right. You know, one of the challenges from the way politics is set up is it doesn't necessarily always allow for that. I mean, we've got a very wide-ranging discussion, which is great, from kind of the dynamics of being individually responsible through to the societal kind of challenges in that regard. I wonder about the institutions that we're part of. So from your perspective, the Chamber, you know, how do you drive responsible thinking and get businesses engaged with this agenda?
Yeah, well, I'll give both an external and an internal perspective. So externally, the Chamber of Commerce exists to support, protect and promote businesses. You know, we're in the city of Bradford. The first ever president of the Bradford Chamber was Sir Titus Salt, who was, you know, responsible for a big part of the Industrial Revolution and building that beautiful village of Saltaire, which is now world known as a heritage site. But even back then, the responsibility for enabling businesses to grow sustainably, create jobs, create wealth, create opportunities for people exists today. So we are responsible for protecting the interests of thousands of businesses in the region that are facing extinction for reasons outside of their control. Huge inflation, supply chain issues, employment, skills gaps, transport infrastructure. So our responsibility is to manage that with the press, that narrative, and balance that with the struggles that the decision makers, whether that's local government or central government, have. So that's our responsibility and how we manage that. We can't be too, shall we say, sensationalist, because we've got to manage both public and private sector pressures. And then internally, I'm responsible for people, so I'm responsible for growing the Chamber as a place to work, as a great place to work, as people change their perspective on their careers going forward, making it somewhere that can challenge them. I think that's a responsibility, to make sure that in their careers they're challenged, they're feeling happy and healthy. We pay them a fair amount of money. I think that's a responsibility. So many constructs within that, both internally and externally, if that answers your question.
That's brilliant. Thank you. Tanka, from our perspective as a school of management in a civic university, what would you take me on it?
So I would say, if you look at school of management within the University of Bradford, as an institution, we always had a strong sense of purpose for social responsibility.
Yeah.
And that goes long way back with the Heritage 1963. The School of Management was set as a management centre. Now, and we are very, very much aligned to building on that strong heritage, and that was through social responsibility. Now, if I really look at how we sort of work with our stakeholders, be it our students, our staff who are doing good work, it starts with the sense of the purpose and the mission. As I sort of don't want to quote word to word, but it's really about the school management. We were very clear in terms of our curriculum, education, the research that we do, really focused on delivering high quality responsible management education research that really serve the society to enable our students to go out there and make a difference. That is it. And that comes through, we drive that impact through our curriculum. So we make sure that our programs, the courses that we deliver, really has the cross-cutting theme of, if it be business ethics that we look at, the sustainability, be it the health and safety of organizations and how we can sort of work. And that has to go all the levels through, and we are not just, we should walk the talk rather than just having a tick box exercise. So that starts from the education in itself. So ultimately, we are a knowledge institution and we want to provide that for the betterment of the society. And the way we can do the tool is education in itself, making sure our curriculum really reflects the sense of purpose. Now, it's all well and good if you just have it written in words. How do you actually get some good education through terms of projects that we give out to our students, the partnerships that we hold? Yeah. We are part of the United Nations Principles of Responsible Management Education signatory. So those values means that we really need to walk the talk in every single thing that we have. Have a check and balance on the type of partners that we build in, both academics, corporates. As a civic organization, we have a responsibility to serve the local community. How can we give our small businesses, entrepreneurs, a space to work with our students? Equally, students have an opportunity to work in the real world. I think that's important, and that will carry on. And the same thing applies for even our colleagues who do research. Do we do responsible research? Is our research going to serve the society? Yeah. There's no point us writing journal papers and scientific articles out there if it's restricted and actually only read by the academia. So there's a huge encouragement even within the School of Management. Make sure that if you are doing a work in, I guess, energy sort of efficiency savings and how businesses can operate, look at how can you, yes, you published in the scientific journals, but how can you actually have an impact to go and tell the lessons learned to the businesses or publish in the media outlet? So the impact is absolutely key. And that's how we sort of drive our responsible management agenda in the School of Management.
Yeah, and I'd add to that the students as well. I mean, I think more or less been here 20 plus years, but the dynamics and the expectations of students in all of that period have been the same, that they want to understand how they can have an impact. And they're increasingly concerned about that being the right kind of impact and the kind of careers and the kind of opportunities they're looking at. I look at some of our student entrepreneurs and the growth and the wealth of ideas that come from a social enterprise perspective. They're not economically entirely driven.
And a couple of examples I want to build on. We will come up with new programs as the time goes on. So when we launch a new program, it's important that we have a thinking set in the mindset of all the academics. We launched a program in MSc in Applied Artificial Intelligence. But does the curriculum really underpin? So you might want to think about, do we actually talk about responsible AI and ethics and safety? Mm-hmm. Are we educating the people who are coming onto it, who will be the future managers and leaders, to have that underpinned? We were the first to have the MBA in innovation, enterprise, and circular economy. And this was 15 years ago, or almost a couple of decades ago, way ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And it's important that we keep up and be at the front foot to be able to do that. And I think that's important. And let's not be complacent and take it for granted of some of the curriculums that we do. And if it doesn't serve the society, I think it's useless.
Purpose, impact, benefit, ultimately, I think that's a good point to finish.
Brilliant. Yeah, well, just bringing that back together then, a couple of final questions. So I think we've touched on this, but perhaps to reinforce it, what's the practical advice, the takeaways that you would recommend to organisations?
Yeah, I think we've alluded to it. So I'll use some personal experience and then things I've learned throughout my time with mentors and managing people. And often failure and mistakes are the best way to learn and reshape your thinking. I just mentioned purpose, impact, benefit. So if any organisation out there, regardless of size, structure, which side of the public-private sector continuum they're on, or in education, charity, third sector, the purpose of the organisation. So if you keep that at the heart of every decision that you make, that should guide you. What's the benefit of everything that you do and who to? So Sankar just mentioned that. It's futile if academics are working tirelessly, spending time and energy on research that isn't required, needed, shared, valued, or accessed. You know, that in many ways is selfish. And one word you'd remove from responsible management is being selfish, isn't it? You know, if we're pursuing something just for our own gains, that is ultimately irresponsible. And ultimately, impact. How can the decisions that we make be impactful for the greater good? So this isn't, I suppose, utilitarianism or altruistic, but, you know, in making decisions and being responsible, you know, I'll give you an example. Trying to make a decision that's fair to all staff, as Sankar mentioned, you'll never please everybody. So do you please the most, the populace, or do you do just what the right thing is, irrespective? And I think that impact in your decision-making should guide you. I use a structure of a flowchart. It doesn't always work, but actually it prevents the bigger mistakes or the, shall we say, the rogue mistakes of responsibility. So that will be just some of my practical thoughts. Little flowcharts never let me down yet.
Brilliant. Sankar.
Brilliant. I was thinking from James's perspective, most of the things resonated very closely to me. So I'll talk a little bit about what I've tried to sort of learn over the years, and I'm still learning. I will never stop learning, and what's worked for me. But I also think there are three things I genuinely believe I think we all should be looking at. So let's start with my own personal sort of learning. Now I think I always start with the big picture. So the reason why I say is so that I can always not have a decision making that is narrow-minded, close-minded, and I think that's important. So it's a bit more sort of openness, but equally I think about the impact your action's going to have. So that's the big picture thinking that I like to take. Second is I test my decisions with, is this fair? I always stop and reflect. I don't make hesitant or sort of knee-jerk reactions. I always let a decision to stop, reflect, moment of, it might be a moment, let's say, overnight even, go out for a run. I let the decision to marinate over time. Sleep on it, marinate. It might be the most different time that I stop and I don't even send an email sometimes. I think about it. So I question whether this is fair. I think that's worked for me, and I'm still thinking about how I sort of, and then the third is, what's that decision actually going to have an impact on? It could be implication on resources. It could be impact on someone's well-being. I think about that. The social awareness is absolutely key. And sometimes some people are much better than the others. If you think that you don't have that social awareness, simple tip, sound check your decision with someone else. It's always a good way to do that. So I think those three, for personally, I'm trying to apply that so that my decisions are, it's a hard one to make responsible in a way.
Yeah.
If you go back to small business or large organizations, I absolutely agree. Stop and reflect, look at your goal, your purpose. Now, stop and reflect whether what you are serving, be it a small business, large organization, the goals and clear are there for the greater good, as you said, or the society. So the purpose is ultimately key. Because even if you are doing your own job, let's say you are just your employee, think about, is this really the role that you want to do? So the sense of purpose is important. People in an organization, people make an organization or a business or government organization. Do you have the right people with you? Because they are the heart of everything that you do. And if you have the wrong set of, if you create a toxic culture, like you said, if people are there who have a selfish attitude and not a selfless, in leadership you need to be a selfless person, I think, most of the time. So the people, having a core good set of diversity of thinkers is important, and that will help an organization to build a good culture as well. So it eliminates the toxic. And the third bit, I think, which is important, is these are three P's. I didn't even realize it was three P's. As principles, and that sets of values, and that could range from whole set of range, and I'm not going to give you a list of these are the three principles you really need to hold towards. No, think what your organization is about. Is it about building a good open transparency? It might be not for someone else. It might be honest and integrity. Think about the principles that really make up your organization, be it small or big. If you can, I think that's what I'm, let's say, at least a meaningful set of ingredients to make it work.
Brilliant. Thank you. One very last question. We're going to ask this from everybody across the series. There's a little bit of change of pace at the end of the conversation. And that's about asking people about their management hero. So who's your management hero? That might be personal or professional, somebody who's inspired or influenced you over the course of your career.
Wow, that's a big question, and you want a change of pace. So I'm gonna pass the ball to Sankar. Well, I think
good passing the ball, James. So no, to be honest, I draw inspiration and I'm influenced by many people. Be it from a professional areas, do you where you work or personal. For example, the reason why I say this, right? There's a moment of time I think, okay, let's take Barack Obama, when he was president. I actually thought he was a good leader when you compare to some of the things, actions. There might be wrong decisions, be it, but you compare to another president, I think there are, yeah, exactly.
Who could you be thinking
I'm
of?
Thinking about, the big T, the Trump. Yeah, he's a leader. Don't get me wrong, because he has got a set of followers, but is the actions responsible? So I draw inspirations from different people, and it could all the way range from Nelson Mandela, who had a sense of purpose for actually believing in getting freedom. So every single time, and it could be someone who's actually my father, who comes from a different sort of self-made way. So I think I can't draw one person, but I would love to. I would love to draw inspiration. I want to continue to do that with different parts of the people I walk into life with.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's hard to disagree with that. So I'll be generalist and I'll try and name some names for you. I think anyone that acts selflessly, and that can be, you know, world leaders, bosses, people doing jobs around the university today, putting other people first, it has to be admired as leadership, responsible management of what they can control. So let's be honest, we're talking about a vast chasm of, you know, big decision making down to just personal decision making as to what they're responsibly managing at that time. I mean, I've been really lucky to have some wonderful mentors and managers across the time. My first ever role was in manufacturing, and a gentleman, a beautifully named guy called Walter Broli, who was an Italian, was wonderful in terms of setting visions, but also keeping people and the impact of his decisions at the core. A wealthy man in his own right, but only made decisions based on his staff, not what suited him. At a football club, I had two very distinct chairmen who were managers, but also taught me, actually coming back to a point that we both discussed, Sankar and I, about decision making. You've got to have perspective. You've got to understand the impact of your decision making and the responsibility of all stakeholders. But I suppose at the core of the question is responsible management is about making those decisions. And sometimes if you're not sure, and if you're really unsure about the ethics or the real impacts of that decision, perhaps sometimes don't make it. And I know that sounds like I'm copping out here, but I learned that sometimes from those two particular chairmen, Julian Rhodes and Mark Lawn at Bradford City, about, you know, when to make a decision when you are solely in charge of it and when not to.
There's something really powerful in the not making a decision and the lesson that actually sometimes the right decision is, I'm not going to make that decision, whether that's to sleep on it.
Correct.
Or actually that's, we don't know, we need more information or anything else. Thank you both very much for the conversation and your insights. I've found it really stimulating. I'm sure our listeners will do as well. And it's a great kickoff for what I hope will be a lot more of these conversations in the future. If people want to reach out to you and contact you, what's the best way of doing that? James?
Yeah, for the Chamber of Commerce, we are WNY Chamber on Twitter and social media. So that stands for Western North Yorkshire Chamber of Commerce. And I think I can be found on Twitter and LinkedIn just under my name, James Mason, 78. Gives my age away.
And for School of Management, University of Bradford, of course, the University of Bradford website's publicly there, www.universityofbradford.ac.uk. And of course, we also have our School of Management webpage as well that you can reach out both. You would, if you search for it, LinkedIn and Twitter ad management, I think that will be the key areas. And personally, I'm again, my Sankar Sivaraja, if you search for me on LinkedIn or Twitter, I'm there. And if you all want to connect, I think that would be the sensible route to sort of connect.
Brilliant. Thank you both. So in my case, it's at Dave P. Spicer on the social media. As Sankar said, you can find the School of Management on at Brad Management. And that's where we put everything else as well. And if you want to come back to us directly about the podcast or anything to do with business and community engagement here at the university, it's bace@bradford.ac.uk. Thank you very much again, both of you. Really enjoyed the conversation today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave, for hosting us.
If you've got a project that you'd love to get done, but you're struggling with the time and resources to do that, that's something that we can help you with. Bradford Business Challenge projects are where we get our students to do, as part of their dissertation, a piece of applied management work for a business like yourself. Either one of our final year undergraduate or MSc students, with the support of an academic mentor, will be able to work on that project for you. There's no cost for you as a business. All we ask for you is to set up with us that project, give us a kind of outline brief that the student will go away and work into a full proposal for you, and then you'll be meeting and liaising with them and their academic advisor to get that project delivered. Because we have multiple students doing these over the course of the year, there's usually a group of students looking for any project at one time. So if that's something that you're interested in and you'd like to know more about, please reach out to us at bace@bradford.ac.uk.